Now I know you already know, but we do have a speaker tonight. And that speaker is Steve Kay from Santee. Thank you.
My name's Steve Knight. I'm a grateful recovering alcoholic.
Hey, Steve.
And I want you to know it's an honor and a privilege to be here at South Bay Pioneers. I haven't been around here much lately because I've been taking care of my wife, but I started coming to South Bay in the 70s when we still were down in the old house. And I love this place, and I love you people. And so it's an honor and a privilege for me to be able to share with you. I have one personal request, and I was really pleased when I walked through the door tonight. On the back there's an announcement about a meeting that needs help. It's called Friends of Bill W's, and it meets in the retirement home over on 4th Avenue in National City. And the reason why it's interesting to me because I've been taking care of my wife for about 8 years, and she was over there, and we started a meeting, and that was the meeting we started, there was a couple, both who are in AA, and sad to say, both of them have passed, and so they need some help over there, and it's on Mondays at 12 noon, and all you have to do is go in the front door and ask where it is, and it's upstairs right on the entryway there. So if you can do that in spare time, I'd appreciate it. Thank you very much. It would be easy to say I drank too much, too long, too often, but every bit of that is true. I'm not a person who thinks there's a reason that I'm an alcoholic from something that happened to me when I was brought up. I'm an alcoholic today because of what alcohol does to me once it gets into me. I got away without alcohol for a long time. It was available in my home. I'm the youngest of four boys in my family, and I didn't fool with it when I was growing up or in high school. I actually came from a little island in the Detroit River, for God's sakes, not a very big place. But I was fortunate enough to win a scholarship from the Navy to a Northwestern University over in Evanston, Illinois. I got through the first year of college without picking up a drink, but the second year started I was rooming with three buddies. We had gotten an apartment, and one Saturday afternoon or one Saturday morning, really, we were looking for something to do. Anybody from Chicago around in here, you know, the old electric runs up from Chicago through Evanston and then Waukegan and then to Milwaukee, right? Yeah. And so we needed to go sightseeing, Where's the best place to go sightseeing in Milwaukee? And we got on the train and rode up to Milwaukee. No, I don't need it. I'm just going to demonstrate, okay? That's okay. Okay, thank you. But we rode the train up there, and we got up, and the first brewery we came to was the old Schlitz Brewery. You know, I love Laverne and Shirley. In case you didn't know it, that's the old Schlitz Brewery in Milwaukee. And they always say you'll never remember forget where you took your first drink. And boy, as soon as I saw Laverne and Shirley, I said, "That's my home." Because we went into Schlitz, and if you've ever made that circuit. And I've made it 100 times since then because I learned the first time I had a drink that that's the place I could get a free drink. And I was always looking for a free drink, okay? And they take you around and show you how they make it. And then they had a place down in the basement, all Bavarian style, real nice and calm and pretty. And they bring trays of that nice, cool amber fluid out, you know. And obviously you're expected to sample it. And I had one. And this is how long I was a social drinker. from here to here. That's the only social drink I've ever taken in my life. Because I got loaded that afternoon and they threw us out of the Schlitz Brewery. Thank God, because I was convinced that I was going to drink all the Schlitz in Milwaukee, and they finally forcefully picked me up and dragged me out of Milwaukee, or I might still be there trying to drink up those suds. And the only reason I say that and the way I say it is because, you know, it was the alcohol that gets me drunk. It's not anything else. And I am allergic to it because I break out in drunks. And I love drunks. I'm a happy, crazy, lousy drunk, okay? And that's the way I started. And for all intents and purposes, that's the way it was until I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I thank God, the Navy was sending me to school, and somehow I managed to continue to get through, and I got a commission, and I came here to San Diego and was stationed initially over in Coronado. And that was when the second important event happened in my life, because those who've been around the military for a long time, you know, the Navy used to float on booze. We had clubs in every car, in every base, and three or four in most bases, and because Coronado was out of the way, and all the big bases are over here and up in Pendleton, Coronado was out of the way. We had happy hour every afternoon. Most of them only had it once a week, and guess who was there every afternoon? Me. And you could get a shot and a beer for 75 cents in those days. And at those prices, who the hell could afford not to drink, you know? What happened is I was sitting at that bar at the club in Coronado one afternoon, like a lot of bars, there was a mirror in the back. And I started looking at that mirror, and I started looking at the character that was looking back at me. And I said, geez, that guy doesn't look very happy. And this is supposed to be happy hour. And I'm not stupid. I want you to know that. I may be a drunk, but I'm not stupid. Because I put two and two together. I said, well, just maybe you're not happy is because you're drinking too much. And, well, what's the only answer to that? This was the only answer I'd had at that time. I guess I have to quit drinking, you know. And I don't know how many of you have tried to quit drinking, but, I was doing fine for a while. But then a buddy of mine came back from overseas, and we had to celebrate. And the only way we knew how to celebrate was to get a great big jug. And I never put it down again until I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. The miracle is that somehow I managed to survive in the Navy. I was on a ship. In those days, you know, the ships are all tied up at the piers out here. Now, how many of you remember when we used to all tie up at the buoys? Come on, there's some sailors in here that used to remember that. The ships were all tied up at the buoys from the front of the harbor to the end of the harbor. We were on the amphib to the end, and we had to take a water taxi or Liberty boat back and forth. And the standing order for the first Liberty boat in the morning, every morning, was look for Mr. Knight on the pier, because I used to manage to get back there, and I would be passed out on the bench or on the deck, and they would get me into the Liberty boat and drag me back. And that's the way I spent most of the time in the Navy. Not all the time, God knows. We went to sea, thank God, occasionally, and I would sober up, I didn't do badly, but I was anything but a character example for the United States Navy. And that's when an important thing happened in my life. You know, Bill talks about that experience, that burning bush experience he had in the hospital. Believe it or not, I had that experience as a kid. This little island that I was raised on was tiny, and there was only There was one school. It was a public school. There were no parochial schools, anything like that. We all went to school together. There's a grand total of 36 in my high school graduating class, so it wasn't obviously a big place. But strangely enough, the two churches that were there, one was Episcopal, if you know anything about the Episcopal Church, and one was Catholic. And if you know anything about those churches, they're very close to each other. In fact, we used to say that the Episcopalians were really Catholics that flunked their Latin, you know. And I'm sure if they did this to this day, the attorneys would have a field day, because the churches are close enough. We celebrated the same festivals and saints' days and all that kind of stuff. And so when it came around to a saints' day, they would come around and say, anybody that wants to go to church, put up your hand. Well, hell, I was always into getting out of school. And so they came around one day and said, anybody that wants to go to church, put up your hand. And so I started out the front door with a half a dozen of my buddies. I didn't know what the church I was going to, but I'm lazy, and the Catholic church was 5 blocks away, and the Episcopal church was only 4 blocks away, so guess what my choice was? If it hadn't been the other way around, I'd probably be a Catholic today, but I got there, and I did all those things I know today that you were not supposed to be. You know, you were supposed to be confirmed, you were all supposed to be this, you were supposed to be that. But all of my buddies went up to receive communion, and I went up, and I really believe I had an experience similar to Bill's. I had that kind of an experience that I've never forgotten it, and I've never lost it. And I carried that with me, and as a consequence, wherever the ship went and wherever there was a church, I went to church. I don't know why in God's name, given the fact that I didn't realize I was a drunk at that time, but it was coming near the end of my time in the Navy, and I had to make a decision either to stay in the Navy or get out, and I made the great momentous decision that I'm going to seminary. Well, let me tell you something. They're not looking for drunks at seminary. And the only thing that got me into seminary is I was here in San Diego in the cemetery was in Cambridge, Massachusetts, and they didn't have any way to check on me. And so I left the Navy 1 month, and then a month later I was in Cambridge, Massachusetts. And the only reason that I got through the first year of seminary, I want you to tell you, and I hate to say this, is because my father died. My father died about midway through my first year, and I had to go home and help my mother, and I came back, and I had failed 2 courses. Normally, failure 1 course was automatic suspension, I mean, kicked out, and a couple of guys got kicked out who hadn't failed any, for whatever reason, they hadn't discovered about my drinking, because they said, we know you've had a hard year, Steve. They thought it was about my father's death. So we'll let you go take the summer off and go back and be with your mother. And then when you come back, we'll arrange to make up the classes. I can say thank God. I can say thank God. Because they had to put me out on the streets, yeah, I'm sure I'd be dead by now. But what happened was, when I got back for the second year, 2 people were to arrive on the campus of that seminary. One was a guy by the name of Bob, wonderful guy. But Bob had a problem. He was a brilliant, brilliant professor in our church, had a PhD from Harvard and all that kind of stuff. But he could not stop drinking. He had been fired from 3 seminaries already. And the second guy to arrive was a guy by the name of Phil, who had become a member of Alcoholics Anonymous before he came to seminary. And he had told them that he was a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And what they hoped to do, they brought Bob from the last seminary that he was in to our seminary, and they hoped to get him next to Phil and get him sober. The only problem is you guys, you know this better than anybody else. Birds of a feather flock together. And Bob wasn't on campus 20 minutes that we were up in his room having a drink, and he had good booze and was willing to share it with me. And you know, have you ever taken those 20 questions? There's one of them that says that you have a cover. You know what a cover is, don't you? The cover is that poor guy or that poor woman that can't hold their booze. And a drunk like me always needs one because I take them along with me. I feed them about three drinks, and the next thing you know, they're flopping around the floor or puking or whatever, guys that can't hold their booze does. And guess what? Everybody's looking at them. They're not looking at me, and I'm just soaking up all that I can get. And so I got away with it for a while, except this doggone guy, Phil, he came to me one day, and I didn't deny I was drinking with Bob, and I had the best excuse in the world. You know, here's this professor of PhD and all this stuff, and he's drinking all the time. At least I went to class occasionally, you know, so that made me better than him, you know. So Phil says to me, he says, Steve, Bob's got a problem. I said, I guess so. That's what everybody's saying. He wasn't asked saying about me. He's talking about Bob. And then he comes with the clincher. He reaches me over, pats me on the back, and he says, "Oh, aren't you a Christian gentleman? Shouldn't you be helping this man?" What are you going to say to that, for God's sakes? And I says, "Well, what do I have to do?" And he says, "You have to take him to a meeting." And I said, "Meeting? What kind of meeting?" And he says, "AA." And I honestly had never heard of it. So I says, "What's that?" And he says, "Alcoholics Anonymous." Well, hell, he wasn't talking about me. He was talking about Bob, you know. And I said, "Well, wait a minute. If you want to take him, to him, a meeting, be my guest." And he just hit me with a clip. Oh, but it's your Christian duty, you know, to take him in. And so I always say I was seduced into Alcoholics Anonymous because I took Bob and we went to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I could cry because, you know, you guys saved my life. I'll never forget it as long as I wait. It was a cold winter's night in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Any of you from Massachusetts knows it gets darn cold. And the meeting was in the basement of a Lutheran church about a block off of Harvard Square. And Bob and I walked down there, and I'll never forget it as long as I live. There was a guy in that cold standing at the top of the stairs going down to the basement of that church where the meeting was. He was the greeter. Where today, whenever I go to a meeting where there's a greeter, I just hug him and say, "Thank you for being, because you saved my life." Because this guy stuck out his hand and he looked me right in the eye and he said, "We're glad to see you." And in my heart and soul, nobody had been glad to see me in a long time. And I went downstairs into the meeting with Bob, and the rest of it is what you people do. You know, we say that Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women. My sponsor, Phil, made me look up the definition of fellowship. And the fellowship that I, in the dictionary that I like, says a fellowship is a society or group of equals or peers. And that's what you guys are. Everybody in this room is equal, and we're together. And we have one purpose, to find a day of sobriety. And I felt that. I didn't understand it, but I felt it. And then I tried to quit drinking. I quit. I can't quit drinking. And they said, and this is a clincher for me. I don't know about anybody else in this room. They told me, "No, you don't have to quit drinking. Your job every morning when you get out of bed is to get on your knees and ask a power greater than yourself to get you through that day without picking up one drink." And that makes sense to me. I knew that I could do one day without one drink. And they said, if you make it to the end of the day, Your job is to get down on your knees and ask and say thank you to that power, because obviously they did for you what you're incapable of doing for yourself. And by the grace of God and Alcoholics Anonymous and you wonderful people, I'm still doing that today. And it's been 58 years since I've had a drink. There's a couple things I'd like to tell you. First, I want to tell you about Bob. By the grace of God, Bob got fired from our seminary, and he got sent to fortunately, God knows how he got another job, but he got a job in our seminary in Berkeley, California. And I knew that, and the church is small, and it was a couple of years before the Navy brought me back here to the West Coast. But I said, I said to myself, I really owe that guy my life. And I need to check on him and see what's happened to him. And the church is not that big. And so I did a little, we didn't have these crazy things in those days, I want you to know. But I got a phone number for him. And I didn't know what I was going to say, but I called him up on the phone, and he answered the phone, and I was humming and hawing probably, and he says, "Knock it off, Steve." He says, "I've been sober for 2.5 years now. Let's go to a meeting." That sucker had gone to the seminary. He got a pistol and shot in the seminary up, for God's sakes, and he was in jail. But God works. The bishop of the diocese was a member of the fellowship, and he got him out of jail and got him back on the street. He couldn't get a job back in the church again, but he had a PhD, so he got a job at San Jose State teaching. And we went down and had a meeting, and I knew him again for the rest of his life. And those are the wonderful things that come to you. I guess I could say something. I told you about trying to quit in the Navy, but that the thing about Alcoholics Anonymous to me is that number one, we're exactly what that definition says it is. And the other, I really consider you my extended family. And thanks to the Navy and a lot of other, things, I've been sober for a long time. And I've traveled a lot. And let me tell you, the greatest experience in the world is traveling around this country or around the world. I've been to meetings around the world now. And going to meetings, God, if you've ever gone to a little meeting in a little town in Montana, there's five people there. If you've ever wanted to feel like a hero, they're just looking for fresh blood, and you go in and they pat you on the back and they make you a hero. But one of the best stories I had is a little town. Anybody here from Oklahoma? Enid, Oklahoma. You know where Enid, Oklahoma is? It's a little town. And they have a little clubhouse. And I was, I had, after I retired, I had gotten a little RV, and I traveled a lot. And I got to Enid. It was my AA birthday, the 12th of September. Yeah. And there was only four people in the room, but they stopped everything. They went out and bought a cake you can't help but saying, want to belong to an organization like this. I mean, I'm sure there's people that don't drink that probably come to Alcoholics Anonymous, and they're still coming because we're so fellow. We welcome people and love people so much. Now, in the big book that Jenna read from there, there's a story, which was really two things that were from the book that were really important to me. Was was, you know, I had that confusion about spiritual and religious, you know, there's a story in the big book called The Professor and the Paradoxes, and he talks about that, and he says, it's like we have four paradoxes in AA, and a paradox is a statement which is on its face value appears to be untrue, but behind it is a great truth. And those it's in the first part of the book. I'd still carry my second edition around. That's my, what was it published when I was in, came into AA. And the first one says, surrender to win. Now, when you hear that, it's not possible. But it's the key. It's the key to my recovery. Because that's exactly what I do every morning. And I still do it every morning because the act of surrender is getting on your knees. And I go get on my knees and ask a power greater than myself not to give me a drink today. I say, you know, my analogy of it is it's like me trying to get into the ring with Muhammad Ali, okay? Old Muhammad could have one arm tied behind his back. I could get in there trying to duke it out, and guess he'd have me flat on my fanny in 30 seconds. And as long as I keep trying to get up and not duke it out, where am I going to get? Flat up. I crawl up, and I crawl through the ropes, and I throw in a towel, and I say, Muhammad, I surrender. And he can never touch me again. Think of it. When I say, booze, you got me beat. Here's the towel. I don't ever have to pick up again. The second one, he says, we have to give it away to keep it. And that's right where our 12th step is all about. You know, when I am well enough to take a message to somebody else, guess what that does for me? Think about it when you go on a 12-step call and what it does to you. First of all, you feel good just being going out and do it. And then when you get the person to a meeting, you feel like God has blessed you. The second one is that we have to give it away to keep it. And that's the same kind of thing, that you can't keep this in you and make it. You got to give it away. What giving it away does for me is it reminds me every time of where I come from and how I have been blessed to have this gift to give away. The third one is you have to suffer to get well. Sounds like crap, doesn't it? But it's the truth. You know, if I didn't have to do the shaking and the puking and all that kind of stuff that I had to do, you know, I wouldn't ever be here today because it just wouldn't have been bad enough. And it's the bad enough that makes us good enough to become God's children. And the last one is we die to live. And what that means, you know, and it's, you know, the book is full of stories about people who we have changed our entire lives. And in a sense, we've put off the old me and build a whole new me for me today. And the whole point for me of being here tonight and being with you people and is to remember where I came from so I can put on the new me and go out there and with God's help somebody else. So I can't thank you all enough for being here. I'd ask you to listen just shortly because I need to say this. I told you that my wife was over at the, that's another no-no that I did. My sponsor's wife introduced me to my wife when I was 2 months sober, I hadn't even quit drinking yet. I proposed to her, I proposed to her in December and we were married the following September. I didn't even have a year's sobriety yet. But guess what? You practice these principles in all our affairs. And I do marriage, or I did marriage, the same way I do sober, one day at a time. And it works. The sad thing is my wife had a congenital disease, which had been bothering her for a long time. And for the last 6 years, I've been her caregiver, 7 years, because she's been dead now here. But one of the places we were at was Paradise Village. But I want to tell you, the last place we were was the place. It's a Sharp Hospital down here. They have a thing now in hospitals, if you haven't been there, called palliative care, and it's for people that are on their way out. And she was there, and I came in. It was the day after I received my 58th token, and my sobriety date is September 12th, and it was September 13th a year ago, and she wasn't able to talk much or to get around much, but she called me over to the bed, and I kneeled down beside the bed, and she said to me, she says, "What's your name?" "My name's Stephen Knight." And she said, "Stephen Knight, I love you," and closed her eyes. She knew. And I can't say anything but thank you to Alcoholics Anonymous and to God, because I had 57 years of her, a direct result of being sober for 58 years. God bless you all. Thank you very much.
Okay, we would all like to thank our guest speaker, Steve, tonight. Please come back and visit us. And I'd like to thank the residents of the house and the Women's Auxiliary for a great dinner tonight. And now, Steve, if you'd like to take us out in the prayer of your choice, please. Okay. Thank you. You can do it from the circle.